So again, welcome. Thankful you're all here tonight. I'd like to lead in with a couple of recent interesting questions that I found and sort of allowed me to go inward a little bit. The questions were, why does the moon seem to change its shape every night? And why can I see the moon in the daytime? It said, the answer to both of these questions is the same. It's that the moon is a world in space just as Earth is. Like Earth, the moon is always half illuminated by the sun. The round globe of the moon has a day side and a night side. From our earthly vantage point, as the moon orbits the Earth, we see varying fractions of its day and night sides. Obviously, we know this. These are the changing phases of the moon. And the moon is in the daytime sky about half the time. It's just that sometimes it's so near the sun that we don't notice it. So this made me kind of ponder out in thinking, how do we unshadow that metaphorical moon that's within? How do we really kind of open up and seeing something that's ever present within us, becoming illuminated in losing those clouds that obscure our sight, seeing, even though there's this blinding factor sometimes, that knowing that that ever presence is always within us. So a couple little reflections here. Is there a path for us to stop our perpetual waning, to begin to wax away the oxidation from our negative conditioning, pivoting from our veiled lives, beginning to heal the many traumas that have attempted to close our mind and harden our hearts and often have? We can indeed begin to move from our partially illuminated crescent state to one that shines more brightly in its wisdom and love. They're moving from the partially illuminated crescent to something that's more fully illuminated. So that's what we're doing in this practice. Most of us are aware of a central teaching of the Buddha on equanimity, upeka in Pali. Equanimity being from the Latin that essentially means equal mind or steadiness of mind. Such a foundational teaching, equanimity is included within the four Brahma Viharas, which are those highest attitudes, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and of course, equanimity. The seven factors of enlightenment, the 10 perfections, which are all of those ethical, moral practices that we engage in. So very important. The Dhammapada, one of those core teachings, informs us that just as a solid rock is not shaken by the storm, even so, the wise are not affected by praise or blame. I recently went to a retreat just for a few days. Just so hard to find time to take off. You know, all of us probably have busy lives. But true of many retreats, this is one of those opportunities for us to steep back down in our practice, begin to become focused, concentrated, become mindful, and removing away some of that, those clouds that blind us in being able to see clearly. Opening our minds, opening our hearts, healing those traumas, doing investigations. So that was definitely something precious for me, and I thank anyone that has an opportunity to go and spend a few days. That's definitely something that's valuable. But even in just coming and sitting, being in the presence of fellow practitioners, or just being more mindful and being fully with someone, gives us those insights that we're not separated, reminds us that love is supposed to be joyful. Love is supposed to, life is supposed to be deeply lived. We're supposed to clearly understand that preciousness. There's such a finite allowance for us in this life that's so rich in the joys and the sorrows that make life life. So we can drop down into a place that's more in self-discovery, investigating all of that, those hard parts and those sweet parts, the joys, everything. And again, seeing that ever-present moon. Thich Nhat Hanh, a famous Buddhist monk, reminds us that the present moment is the only moment available to us. And it is the door to all moments. So mindfulness gives us that ability to be more present. And that's where we can begin to release some of those strongly held views that push away our present experience. And in that, it's been said that the only thing that we truly have to heal is the present moment. Once we get that right, everything falls into a place of harmony and peace. So what are we doing here? It's like, you know, big boy, big girl timeouts that we're putting ourselves in and coming and sitting on cushions. We're actually changing our relationship with all life. That's what we're doing. We're retraining our mind. We're undertaking a fearless practice where we recraft our thoughts and our perceptions, our conditioned views. We give ourselves pause in having more discernment of those words that we speak and those actions that we undertake that come from a place that's non-harming. We're changing how we live. We're changing how we love ourselves and all life. So apparently the time out is well worth it. This concentrated mindfulness practice allows us to meet all experience in whatever it may be. We can check in where we're holding tension. I don't need to do that. I can drop it down. We don't need to push away. We don't need to pull it in. We can have preferences. But soften. That middle way. Something that's steady in mind and heart. A quote by Robert Frost that said, "The only way out is through." Maybe I would put the word out in parentheses and just say the only way is through. Or the only way is just that inner being that Thich Nhat Hanh spoke of. Just that intimacy that's inward relating with all life. These deep, deeply entrenched patterns of conditioning where this processing unit that we've got that automatically meets new experience based upon previous traumas, joys, sorrows, whatever it may be, and defines that, puts it in a bucket, and then wants to move on. But little do we know that it is within that computation that keeps us stuck. In seeing something based upon a perception that's no longer valid, that no longer serves us. And we all know this neuroscience, nerdy stuff that they say that's just so fabulous and reaffirms teachings. Donald Hebb probably being the most famous that reflected neurons that wire together, I'm sorry, that fire together, wire together. We know the truth. We know these patterns can be changed. We can shift, pivot those deeply conditioned patterns. We can begin to investigate them without judgment, without wanting them to be different than they are. That example being judgment, maybe it's something that we need to step back from and say, what is it within me that needs to be nurtured and loved and healed? Or maybe I need to pull back and consider a boundary that until I can be in a place of no harm to this person or myself, maybe I just need to remove myself from that space where I'm in a place of harm. And coming back, dropping down inward, seeing those little boys and little girls that are so fearful and traumatized and confused, and realizing that that confusion has been handed down to us from earlier versions of ourselves. So that's what we do. We turn towards it softly, fearlessly, bow, invite it in for tea. We do our best. But it's great to have that awareness of those blind spots so we can have more discernment in being better prepared when we hit those potholes that can completely derail us and shake us to our core and knock us out of alignment over and over again. I had heard an interview, my first exposure to this lecturer, Tony Robbins, that said something to the effect, I sort of cleaned it up, but something to the effect that said, there seems to be a paved road that leads us to suffering, but only a dirt path that leads to peace and joy. So we get out there with having worked on highways for a few years. We get out there with a lute. Coincidental is one of the tools that they use in highway work, which was an instrument back in the day, apparently. And we start to better define those pathways within ourselves and model how we travel in the world so that other people can live by that example. Living skillfully becomes evidenced by our ability to develop more mastery of that art of beginning again and again and again and again with that constant steady mind and an open, fearless heart. Bear with me if I slaughter this. Maha, within the Maha Rahulovada Sutta, within the Pali canon, the Buddha saying to his son, who later became a monk, Rahula, apparently they had some baggage within their families too, said, Rahula, any form is to be seen as it actually is with right discernment, as this is not mine, this is not myself, this is not what I am. We know that speaks to those characteristics, those marks of existence that we hear so prevalently within this practice, that component of suffering that's true of us, all of us. But also understanding it's part of life, but there's a path out in developing more wisdom and living more wholesomely and skillfully. That component of impermanence that sees the ephemeral nature, that short duration, those little wavelets that surface and are sustained for a short amount of time and then pass away, that remind us And then the component, obviously, of no self, anatta, non-self, that remind us that this is not me. This is not mine. This is not who I am. I am bigger than this story. There's a passage from the Upanishads, some Indian teachings that I find beautiful, I'll share. It says, like strangers in an unfamiliar country, walking every day over buried treasure, day by day, we enter that self while in a deep sleep, but never know it, carried away by what is false. Day and night cannot cross that bridge, nor old age, nor death, nor grief, nor evil, or good deeds. All evils turn back there, unable to cross. Evil comes not into the world of the wise. One who crosses by this bridge, if blind, is blind no more. If hurt, ceases to be hurt. If in sorrow, ceases sorrow sorrowing. At this boundary, night itself becomes day. Night comes not into the world of reality. So we're able to see the moon. Equanimity is that component, that fruit that allows us to begin to awaken to the full experience of each moment, whatever it may be. Beyond just this relative realm, something that's more absolute. So it is that state of maturation in our lives, even though we're here in time out. It truly is a measure of our progress in being able to recognize those experiences that are temporary, love, joy, peace, as we journey to become those states of love, joy, and peace, and removing all of those obscurations, in seeing the reversal of the effects of those poisons of greed and hatred and delusion, these administered antidotes that are working their ways through our minds and through our hearts, and softening those triggers where we can pause and say, hang on a second, how did this go last time? This is suffering. This is me wanting to take refuge in something that's comfortable and familiar, but only defined in more suffering, this cyclic pattern. I've done this. Why am I doing this again? And then eventually, we do it again and again and again, of course. But we recognize what we're doing. And then we become more open towards living wholesomely and not harming ourselves or others. So it begins to fall away through the practice of having a concentrated mind, being mindful, being aware, being present, having insights, clarity, and not running away from all that fear. It's been said that a plant needs sunshine and rain to grow, just as all beings need love and suffering to grow. Therefore, when suffering comes, drink it in like water and allow it to make you more beautiful. We look at those poisons, hatred as an example. We recognize that we're really just being angry at a thought. There's no power there. And we recognize that equanimity, that steadiness of mind and openness of heart, gives us the intimate relationship between the thought and the emotion. We become aware that we're only limited because we're conditioned to do so. I have no idea. This may be something that I found, maybe something that I ad-libbed in some way. Our senses are our windows to the world. Sometimes, often, the mind blows through them and disturbs everything within us. Some of us leave the windows open all the time, allowing the sights and sounds of the world to invade, to penetrate us. Don't you want to close your windows and returning to the warmth of the fire that burns within? Are you afraid of solitude, the emptiness, and the loneliness that you may find when you face yourself alone? Hello, fear. There you are again. But we can recognize that you cannot be lonely if you like the person you're alone with. To love oneself is the beginning of a lifelong romance, or in my case, it would be called a bromance. So when we begin to understand, we can't help but to love from a place that's free of some of those conditions, at least relaxed. We open through looking at things that close us down. We turn towards that fear. This has been shared multiple times, probably here. It's very relevant. A poem called The Guest House by Rumi. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some monetary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He or she may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet each at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has sent you, has been sent as a guide from beyond. So we can soften our wilderness of emotions and opinions. We become more in tuned in sensing those slight disturbances within the force. We can become like the little child, seeing things again for the first time all over again. And I believe, I remember someone, this was shared, and someone had commented, so I figured I'd share it again in expanded form. From Thich Nhat Hanh, part of it speaking of equanimity, the element of equanimity specifically, or that freedom. In true love, you attain freedom. When you love, you bring freedom to the person you love. If the opposite is true, it is not true love. You must love in such a way that the person you feel loves free, not only outside, but also inside. Dear one, do you have enough space in your heart and all around you? This is an intelligent question for testing out whether your love is something real. First towards self. That place of authenticity. This is how we truly love, by knowing the present moment in which we stand. Thich Nhat Hanh goes on in saying that we are here to awaken from our illusion of separation. Coming back to that radiant light of wisdom that's inherent within all of us. This has been spoken to throughout the ages, saints, sages, lovers, enemies, artists. Just to quote a couple of lyrics from a recent playlist. Yours is the cloth, mine is the hand that sews time. Led Zeppelin, just speaking of that interconnection between all of us. Neil Diamond, of all persons. Dude brought out Neil Diamond. You are the sun, I am the moon. You are the words, I am the tune. Play me. And maybe for those people that are moviegoers, that have seen The Matrix, realizing that there is no spoon. And coming back towards that hallway where we're connected with all life. And we stand back in a power that's beyond this physical constraint. I personally think that that pathway, in great part, is as an expression of gratitude. I work at Mission Health. We have these wellness activities that we do. Little happiness journaling things that come up, that we do little lunch and learns. Quote by Eleanor Roosevelt, happiness is not a goal. It is a byproduct. So that's what we develop more of. Happiness, the intimacy with that present moment. Some of the teachings within these modules spoke of happiness through gratitude being that physiological experience of emotion that feels like happiness, but that also arises naturally in situations of scarcity. So that place of gratitude, deep, deep gratitude. Wow, the tornado just knocked everything out. I'm so glad that I'm alive and you're alive. And that's all that matters. Just that deep reverence. Or when we're so incredibly hungry or thirsty that we drink and we're just with that fully. So that state of natural gratitude brings this ever presence of happiness, and that can be cultivated. That's what we're doing here. Part of that loving kindness practice where we invite compassion to ourselves and forgiveness and healing and all of these things. Gratitude, forgiveness, healing, all of these things that are wholesome, these wholesome emotions that really bring us to a place of more equanimity, steadiness of mind. Part of that same little journey spoke of some tools that people have used. You know, I'm sure we've all heard of gratitude walls or at school, which is inspiring to hear that there's meditation in schools and some classrooms are doing gratitude walls or using their social media, Instagram, archival data, whatever it may be, to do vision boards of gratitude. Just really inspiring, cool stuff. Writing impact letters, just letting people know how they've impacted our lives. And just having some awareness of that litmus test for happiness and recognizing that if I associate my happiness with this particular thing and the wind did blow it away, is that my happiness? It's not my happiness. True happiness comes from that place that is beyond limits, that is present and fully with an experience rather than wanting it to be different in some way. I think John F. Kennedy's been in the sort of the focus, 100-year anniversary of his birth, said, as we express our gratitude, we must never forget that the highest appreciation is not to utter words, but to live by them. And that's what we do here. We practice our highest, best version over and over again because it continues to renew, to refresh. I'd lived in quite a few different places. One place was in Philadelphia. I lived right behind Ben Franklin High School. And Philadelphia has been very successful with a anti-graffiti program, murals all over the sides of walls. Beautiful, beautiful art. Apparently, if you Google Ben Franklin High School and look for mural, MU, it pops up murder. There's been so much trauma and heinous things that have happened. They have this program, part of that mural campaign at Ben Franklin High School. The message of that mural is, "When I am at peace." So this is what the kids are propagated with every day, walking in and out of school. And it says such things as, it goes on to say, when the city is at peace also, but the primary focus is, when I am at peace, I will finally be free of resentment. I will have clarity and can focus on what matters. My head gets clear of the wrong things. All is silently cherished. So coming to that place of equanimity supports our peace, supports our love. We come to a place of soft focus, open-heartedness. A lot of stuff. I'll just read this so we have time to share, just as a final reflection. It's sort of a long poem. It's called If by Rudyard Kipling. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowances for doubting them too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools, if you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss, if you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long before they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. So thank you.